Hello, this is Dr. Ryan McConnell, your host with Spilling the DPT, and we'll be using a solo flying interview style episodes for physical therapy students at any level of professional education to engage on hot topics that you wish you had learned in academia. Weekly episodes will include practical survival guides as well as venting on issues surrounding professionalism all the way through healthcare management and leadership. All this delivered with some comedic relief and storytelling to remind you all that we are human. And this is your one-stop shop to receive doses of encouragement and motivation through interview format to improve your PT clout. All right, so we are here today with Courtney Kleeman, and she has a variety of public speaking, branding, and just interviewing knowledge that we're going to talk about and kind of see how this goes today. And I want to take a second to let her introduce herself and talk about some of the work experience that she's had and get to, so that everybody can get to know her.
Thank you, Ryan. So I have some journalism experience. I started as a news reporter in Augusta, Georgia, and from that role for 2 years, I really got some interview experience under my wing, and I learned how important it is to really listen to people and be genuine. And so when you're interviewing somebody, what I learned there in that job is just to, you know, you really can't teach empathy, but if you can put yourself in their shoes, then that'll help you in any situation. So I think with that role, since I covered a variety of topics and subjects, I got the best knowledge that led me to my career today. So from news reporting to public relations and social media management, that's where I got my job today. And so I work for a company called Diverse Concepts, and we own and operate several restaurants across the nation. And the brand that I particularly work for is for Paula Deen's Family Kitchen, and I help with her PR and her quarantine cooking segments and her social media presence. So just listening to her too, and how she handles public scrutiny and how she approaches her audience and how she stays genuine has helped me kind of learn how to write and things like that too. So I'm just really thankful for all the opportunities I've been given. And I just think the most important thing you can do in your career always is to trust your instincts and be yourself and always over prepare, because you never know what's going to happen, and they always want somebody that they can rely on. So
yeah. So in saying that, obviously you're a ton more qualified to probably lead a podcast and all of these things that we're going through here, but you did mention probably four or five different things that I think are awesome that I would want anybody who's listening to hear. And really the first thing that rang a bell was teaching empathy, but I want to make sure we circle back to that with the topics you were talking about. What do you feel is maybe the most valuable for, we talked a lot about parallel skills for physical therapists, and empathy being one of those, but how would you prepare yourself before an interview, and maybe share some of those interviews where you did have to realize that, I'm interviewing somebody that's, you know, hurting or whatever was going on in their life.
Yeah, I think, well, what I would do, I'll give a specific example. There was this lady and her husband was in Afghanistan deployed. And the point of my story was to cover this program in Augusta, Georgia, that helps parents like her that are basically single parents while their husband is deployed, and to spotlight that program, but also share her story of her daily routine. And she was a working mom. And so, you know, she's trying to balance a lot of things at once. And so I think when you're about to interview someone like that, just kind of ask the questions that you would want to know and let them do a lot of the talking. I think where people go wrong is they don't listen enough. So if you just listen to them, you can really pick up on something and go in depth from there and use that kind of as a springboard to go into another area. So if you have a certain doctor you're interviewing, for instance, and you can kind of prepare and think ahead of how that doctor may answer the question, let them answer it and then ask them a follow-up question to what they just said, if that makes sense. So then it'll give the audience that you're trying to give this knowledge or information to exactly what they want.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really important thing. I think everybody likes to hear their voice or likes to hear themselves talk for the most part, but I think one of the early lessons that I was taught from somebody who was in marketing, communication, PR, variety fields, they've all said something similar, which is be interested in what's being said, not be interesting, and to, like, you know, make yourself the subject of or the spotlight of the conversation.
Right. And
I think there's a few things with that. It's one, people will say some pretty crazy stuff and it could be shocking. So, like, being able to not only empathize, but to regulate your response, like, what do you do to kind of prepare for that? What sort of scenarios would you put yourself through?
Oh, that's a good question. So I always will read people's, it sounds kind of cliche and weird, but read their body language. So, you know, you are taking up their time, right? So if you can read their body language and see, okay, well, they may not be interested in this interview at all. They don't want to be here. You can obviously wrap it up. Or like I said, just go back to being yourself and being genuine. So almost every person that I spent time with, I would make sure that they picked the place they wanted to be interviewed, which most of the time would actually be in their home. So they felt the most comfortable because that was the environment they were used to and they're surrounded by every day. So that would be, you know, also someone's office. You know, they're there 8 to 9 hours or more a day, things like that. And then at the end of the interview, it was almost like a lot of people I met, we became friends because we connected so much during that time. And they, you know, either they were a mentor to me or vice versa. So I feel like if you really can just be genuine and let them say what they want and ask those questions where it's not going to get you a yes or no answer, it'll be kind of open-ended. I think that helps a lot too.
Yeah. How do you, so a lot of cases, and I'd say you probably covered a bunch where the topics or the subjects that you were covering were not necessarily good news. And I think that the world is probably hit with a ton of that right now is that, you know, we tend to do stories on things that do raise emotional height, you know, to new emotional heights and things like that. But what would you do when somebody maybe said something that was, you know, really struck you? Like what sort of things would you do? I know obviously part of it's being human, but, you know, I've had people unload on me in the evaluation or initial evaluation with the patient, and they go into a completely tangential story, which, you know, you do want to listen and hear them out, not cut them out off. But what do you do in that case where maybe they start diverting or going down? I know you said you read body language, but what if they are going down what we might call like a dark path? Like, how do you recenter that conversation without interrupting them, but also being genuine and, like, you know, trying to protect them?
Yeah, that's definitely tough because it's like you want to be a good host during the interview and you want to put them at ease. So I think honestly I would let them kind of vent if you could and get it all out, and then you can refocus and ask a new question and let them kind of reset.
And then what sort of, I know you said you try and read their body language, and that might be easy for people with high EQ or, you know, just that might be well versed in that. I know there's some authors that worked for the CIA and things like that, that wrote some books on the topic. But what about for those people that aren't very good at reading body language? Do you have any tools or things that have helped you recognize, like, when you need to maybe wrap things up or go a different direction?
Yes. So, I guess I experience the most with politicians. So they are on a huge time constraint. They have a team around them. And once they start getting fidgety, you know, like playing with their watch, looking down, thinking of the time, not really listening to you when you're asking the question, then you realize, okay, they're not interested. I'm not leaving a good impression. It's time to wrap this up, honestly. Yep. So yeah, I would look for, you know, somebody looking around, looking like they're honestly bored or not making eye contact with you, and they just seem completely uninterested.
Yeah. And I think I had read something in, I think it was the definitive book on body language, that a lot of people's bodies will, and this isn't for anybody who's listening, like an all catch all sort of rule of that we're talking about or a law, but people's feet or a foot tends to divert the attention to where it wants to go, almost like kicking a soccer ball. So if you were interviewing somebody or talking to somebody and they position their foot or their toes towards an exit, that might be their subconscious speaking, saying, I need to exit this conversation and I need to position my body in a way that communicates that, even though they may not mean to. So I think that that was one of the biggest things. It's a little bit different in healthcare because a lot of times the patient's sitting, but you know, crossed arms when you ask a question, some things like that are definitely cues.
Right. Yeah. And then emotionally too. So I had a lot of stories where it was a sad situation. And I guess one of them that I can remember right off the top of my head was a little girl died in a car accident. And so they were doing a fundraiser in her honor. And so unfortunately it's, you know, as a parent, it would be so hard. And I feel like it would be very invasive if somebody wanted to interview me about my kid that had just passed away. But I had talked to this lady for weeks before we did the interview and made her feel comfortable. And with her body language, I could tell she was about to break down. So that's when I just turned the camera off and gave her a moment because I didn't want her to be embarrassed and I didn't want her to lose the whole point of the message of why it's so important, you know, to wear your seatbelt or why it's so important, you know, the message she was trying to get out to the people who live in Augusta at that time. So I think you have to just observe them and protect them kind of in a way, you know, too, even though it's patients, it's not people on the news, but still you have to protect them and kind of look out for them because like you said, they'll go on tangents and rants sometimes.
Yeah. And I like how you mixed a couple of different things, like protecting them and the message and things like that. A lot of times that can get lost and really you can lose that very, very quickly. And I think with your experience, you probably have seen that not only digitally, brand trust and things like that, but also, you know, in person. Do you think you could speak on maybe those points, like the difference between, you know, digital communication and maybe being able to decipher some of that and, you know, address some of those concerns?
Yeah. So for digitally, are you just saying digital interviews or podcast?
Yeah. Digital interview or podcast. Say you don't have body language. Like if you...
Right.
Is there anything in their speech that you would be able to recognize if you didn't have?
I think just if it's just airspace, you know, nobody's comfortable with silence. So I think to avoid some of that is just kind of over prepare. I actually read an article that when you are going to give a speech of anything or anything of that nature or speak in front of anybody, comedians do the best job of preparing because they always have that punchline, but they don't want to be nervous leading up to the punchline. So they will over prepare and practice over and over and over again. So I think when you're going to interview somebody and it's going to be on Zoom, for instance, it's almost like you have to practice before you do it and make sure that you look okay. It sounds okay. Everything's going to make sense. So you can avoid anything that would be kind of awkward or take up someone's time, you know, like that.
You brought up something just in that kind of hit me, because it's definitely part of body language or perception, the professional attire, or maybe the way that, you know, self-grooming or things like that when you are interviewing. Were you taught anything specifically in that, just as far as representing a brand or yourself interviewing, just as, you know, maybe things that you've read or that you've had training on that would be important?
Well, definitely, of course, always be professional and wear professional attire. I will say if I were to public speak, this sounds so silly, but I do not wear high heels, for instance. So there's no way that I would want to go on a stage in high heels because I feel like it would make me uncomfortable. So I think if you are going to go do a public speaking thing or interview somebody, don't overanalyze it. If you don't wear a business suit every day, don't go and wear a business suit. You know, just wear what you normally would to work. And then I think that'll make you more comfortable.
That's a strong point there. So one thing that at least I'm curious about, and I think anybody who hears that anybody was in, I don't know that a whole lot of people know anybody that was in broadcasting or actually worked for news, but everybody's seen the movie Anchorman. Do you do, you know, speaking exercises like that in preparation, or what are some maybe key points of communication that you should consider, whether it's like pacing or pronouncing certain things? Like, is there anything like that that
in the world? Well, I'll be honest, I am very high energy, so I have to, because I feel, well, my point with this is I'm very high energy, and so I am very sometimes emotional, and I think being nervous is something that's selfish, because then it's going to take away the feelings of others, if that makes sense. And then especially if you're public speaking, if you're nervous, the crowd is going to pick up on that. So I would say what I do is work out before I'm going to go do something big to kind of get that extra energy out of my system, and hydrate and make sure I get good sleep, you know, the night before. And then you really do feel so much better. So you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I'm nervous, or my stomach hurts, or, you know, because you feel mentally and physically prepared enough for what you're going to be doing. So before like a big event, if we have a book signing, with Paula Deen, and I know there's going to be a lot of media there and she's going to be there and it's going to be a long day, I'll just make sure that I stay extra hydrated and that I practice the speaking points and make sure that the media is on top of their game for her and things like that. So just kind of, again, over preparing physically too. So if you're like me and you're very energetic, you'll feel better at the end of the day if you've already gotten your workout done and everything like that.
So you made a point of talking, preparing, not only physically, but you also said being well prepared with your talking points. And that's actually an art, that's a craft, and it's probably very easy to you because you've done it for so long. But what are, you know, some guides maybe to preparing, I call them root questions. Like if you are, you use the example of trying to raise awareness for wearing a seatbelt. Like if that is the purpose of the interview, mm-hmm. how do you design good questions to get there? And, you know, do you have some sort of exercise or algorithm or way to think about questions prior to an interview to get to that meaning? And how much of it's ad lib and just from experience?
Well, I think that's a good question. I really don't have a puzzle or anything to help with that. But I would say, well, in journalism, at least, you know, if it is a story, for example, with the seatbelt thing, you could do a statistic and start the story off with statistics of people who didn't wear it and passed away from it. And then you could just have a genuine story of why it's so important and build it around the family of the, you know, the child that lost her life about it. So I think you would ask those questions of, you know, like, what was your child like? If you could share anything about her, what was her number one thing that people loved about her, and what would she want people to know about her? So you just ask those questions where it's heartfelt and genuine, and then that person's going to open up and share the most important thing they felt about that her kid at the time, you know?
So are you trying to tease out the human element of, you know, the interview or the person that's in front of you and appeal to emotional decision-making, or what is it, what's the purpose of pulling that story, I guess? Is there something in media or in interviewing that you're aware of that you need to try and get out because it appeals to an audience or the person you're speaking to? Is there anything like that you can think of?
Yeah, I think every time that you do a story or anything you're doing, you, like you said, you need to know your audience and you need to know who you're serving. So a story like that could help other teenagers who aren't making those decisions, because it's just a 2-second decision that could save your life, you know? So when you're thinking about those stories, and I'm an overly empathetic person, I do get emotional, I would have to always just say, well, this story is going to help others, to keep me from crying with the mom, if that makes sense. So yeah, I think you just have to, you know your audience and know what the purpose of your interview is.
Yeah, because I would say in trying to tie it back to physical therapy, one of the interesting things is there's not a whole lot of education in the entry-level program about maybe root questions or the ways to really get after meaning. And sometimes we lose that of like, what's the meaning of each encounter that we're with a person? And it you have to figure out, I think with you, you've got an idea of, hey, we want a story on this and to raise awareness of this in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
But in physical therapy, there's a lot of assumptions in any setting. It's they're here because they hurt and they want us to get rid of that. But it's tied to so much more. And so creating a good question, a lot of times physical therapists lead the interview, which we'll call an initial evaluation or encounter with the patient as the initial, you know, interview.
Mm-hmm.
You'll say, well, something broad, like, why are you here today? And just to give you an example of probably something every therapist out there has heard is they say, well, a variety of responses. It'll either be, well, didn't you read what the doctor sent you, you idiot? Or is it not on the paper in front of you? Or might even be they go straight to, well, my knee hurts and they told me to come here. So
right.
it ends up being a really superficial or very shallow dive at why they're really here.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, there's different questions that I've found to be effective at, like, figuring out some people are there, they decided to go get healthcare and use their insurance or pay money to figure out what was wrong with them. Mm-hmm. Because it's limiting them in some way. And it's affecting them emotionally, physically. It can't just be one. And so I tend to lead my interview now kind of with a question that's like, I'm glad that you're here today. Now that you're here, could you tell me a little bit about what your biggest worry is with everything that's going on? And that kind of sets the stage to have them give you more than, well, my right knee hurts.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
So, you know, that I think is one thing. And I think you hit too on maybe stepping away. That's one thing I had a horrible time with was empathy. And I want to come back. I said, I wanted to circle back to that. I had a hard time with that. People say something that was really hard to relate to. Like, you have no experience with it. And you mentioned somebody losing their little girl. And we'll talk, I'd like to hear more about, like, how did you mentally try and get ready for some of those situations where, you know, for instance, we deal with PTSD or people that, you know, mm-hmm. war veterans, not just to say that war veterans are the only people with PTSD, but traumas, all sorts of things that we've never personally experienced.
Right.
And we know empathy heals, but what are maybe some things that you could do or that you have done that will help with that?
Yeah. So some things that would help me was I would kind of pre-write the outline of my story, so I knew the direction that I wanted it to go. And that way, if I got lost in the emotion or anything like that, I already had the outline and I already had the end goal. So if you can kind of think ahead of, or even ask them, what's your goal? Where do you see yourself after you're done with physical therapy? Maybe that could help you mentally, because you know that every single day you're contributing to their health and you're helping them mentally and physically too. Like you said, you know, they're probably struggling with things that we've never had to endure if we're a healthy person. So, and we don't have anything injured. So that's what I would try and do. And then, I mean, to be honest, there were hard days, and there were days where I would just cry in the news truck before the story or after interviewing people. So I think you just have to be human, and not everybody is perfect, and you're going to have days where it's hard, but at least, you know, at the end of the day, you're making a difference in someone's life. So it's worth it.
So you said a lot of things about it. When you said you were in the news truck, was that like before or after the interview? Just so I missed that.
Well, in the news truck, I'm trying to think. Sometimes it would be both. I think the hardest story I did was involved a 2-year-old that drowned. And I mean, it took before and after to get the courage to interview family members. So it just depended on the case, really.
How do you ask those difficult questions? You know, like, you've prepped for them, and you know that it serves a greater purpose. So I would imagine some mental framing is part of that. But there are, I think, a lot of therapists avoid difficult questions.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that actually tackling some of those questions, like, have you found that to be beneficial? Or why would you encourage physical therapists to maybe dig a little bit deeper without prying
right.
into some of those things?
I think at the end of the day, it helped me do my job better because I got the response I needed that would help others. So I think if you just frame it like, I'm not being invasive, they feel comfortable enough to open up to me, they know me at this point, then I think that will help you get through mentally that it's worth asking that question after they trust you. You know, it takes a little while to build trust, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I think a lot of people right now are pretty skeptical about the way healthcare is being conducted and where their money's going and value. There's a lot of that, or at least more in my area where people are saying more about that. And I know you've got some family ties to healthcare and probably have heard similar events, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that being said, I kind of want to give you the opportunity to talk about, I know we had discussed a couple of topics that we wanted to maybe hit on during this time, but is there anything that you feel would be relevant for young or aspiring master clinicians to maybe hear from you?
The only thing I can really think of again is just be yourself. You know, just think of yourself when you were a patient and you had to go to the doctor. What made that doctor stand out to you? And I think it's always been the doctors that made me laugh, or I could tell that they were genuine. Or when I had my son, I connected with my OB because she would tell personal stories, you know, and tell, she was just a human at the end of the day, but also had the clinical side. So I think if you are yourself and you're professional, then you're going to go far in your career.
Do you think that there's any, like, right off the bat cues, either body language or narratives that tell you that somebody's not being authentic or their genuine, you know, self?
I'm just trying to think. I'm thinking of the medical field, and I'm just thinking back. I think if people, yeah, if they're not warm, if they're not welcoming, if you're just another number and they're going to see a patient right after you and they're in a hurry, you'll pick up on that, you know? But yeah.
Yeah, I think that when you don't add personal stories or things to, I think at a level a little bit deeper than, you know, the formalities of I'm so-and-so and I'm here to do this job, that's probably some of it. But I think we even talk about being genuine or authentic in lecturing. We talk about it, and I hate the word lecturing, but public speaking in general is like people can tell when you're putting on a facade or they just don't buy it. It's pretty easy, not even just from listening to recordings, but body language. It's easy to tell when you're faking it, trying to make it, sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. You know, it sounds really silly, but everybody's probably heard of Rachel Hollis, and she's, you know, from Texas. She's one of the highest paid public speakers, and she just started off saying yes to everything. So whenever anybody would invite her to public speak, she would. And now she's an author and she's a multimillionaire, doesn't even have a college degree. She just built her own empire marketing wise. And she's taught a lot of online classes about how to be a public speaker. But that's the number one thing she will say is, you kind of hit the nail on the head, is being yourself. And if you have a facade, people will pick up on that. And, you know, the energy that you want to attract is in the room, and she has a whole thing all about that. So it's very true. Yeah.
So she would be somebody that you would maybe recommend people, you know, seek advice from, or is there any other resources or podcasts or different maybe seminars that somebody could listen to or go and attend to get better at interviewing and public speaking?
She definitely does have free podcast, but for the rest, I would have to look up. I'm not sure. I'm going to look at my library right now and see what I have. Yeah. See if any of these would help them. Let's see. No one in my library that would really help, but I'm sure there are a lot of resources out there.
I know that just talking off the top of my head, there are obviously a bunch of books that help with, not necessarily specifically interviewing, but being your authentic self or empathy, providing, you know, empathetic care. So one of those, a book called Compassionomics that has been read recently. And then there's also I think it's a digital program called Empathetics, which helps healthcare professionals and others find a way to, like, bring empathy into their practice, because it doesn't come easily for a lot of people, but that's something to consider. if you haven't thought of any others, I want to go through our closing questions that I try to ask everybody and see what you've got for us.
Okay.
So one, what are you most excited or passionate about right now?
Most excited or passionate about? Professionally?
It could be, yeah, professionally, personally.
Oh my gosh. That's such a hard question.
Exactly.
So. I don't know. Well, like I said, we are doing quarantine cooking with Paula Deen. That's so silly. So I guess it's fun coming up with topics for that.
Yeah.
And I guess my passion right now, honestly, in the restaurant industry, I'm glad that everybody has a job still and that they're working hard, and it's been fun to curate content for the restaurants that we operate and come up with new ideas in this crazy world we're living in. I mean, we're 6 months into the pandemic and every day is different, and we still don't know the future of the restaurant industry right now. So yeah, that's kind of my passion, I guess, is like every day I'm just living through it, trying to figure out what to do next for marketing that will keep us alive, keep us afloat.
That's kind of why I've been throwing this question out there, because I think a lot of people have been having a hard time actually thinking about, like, what am I excited about during COVID-19? I mean, this is so many shutdowns and everything. And I was halfway expecting to hear that it was going to be UT football or
something like that. Oh gosh, if we have a season, I hope.
Exactly. So, okay. The next question that I had for you is, what do you feel like the most influential thing or event has been for you in the past year?
In the past year? I think the most influential event was when we opened a new restaurant in Branson, Missouri, just because I was new to the company and I saw how hard that everybody worked. And when you're a director of a restaurant, it's the restaurant industry, first of all, is a very tough business. It's long hours. And so I watched some of the directors be away from their families 3 to 4 weeks at a time to do this. So when we opened that new restaurant, it was cohesive. And it was the first moment I realized, hey, we're a team. We're in this together. We just did this. We were opening a massive restaurant in a new city. So that was a really cool event. And I was proud to be part of that. I think that's one thing in the past year I've done. But yeah, I mean, 2020 has been an awful year, bro. Let's be real.
I thought about just go ahead and, you know, making this a future date and post like it's just 2021, because I think anything that's got 2020 in it, it's just not attractive right now for
no, all vacations canceled. 2020 yeah. is canceled. Yeah.
The cruise ships and everything. So yeah, it's definitely tough to find those things. And then last thing I got for you, and then we'll wrap things up, is what has been your biggest failure or possibly learning event in, I guess you could say the last recent history. So last year, or last couple months, what's been your biggest learning experience?
Well, I think this was my second job, and it was WVLT in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I was an overnight news reporter. My news director pulled me in her office and said, hey, you're just not doing a good job. You're just not what we want. You know, you're not asking the tough questions. And that just motivated me to prove her wrong. And I wouldn't be where I'm at in my career if I didn't suck it up and say, you know what? I'm going to do better than you ever wanted, and I don't need you anyways, pretty much. So
yeah.
I think when people try to put you down and hurt your confidence, you've got to rise above it. And it was hard at the time, and it was a struggle for a couple of months, but not renewing my contract was probably the best thing I did at that, and not being at that news station, because it wouldn't have gotten me to where I am today. So even though that was about 7 years ago, I still think of that moment of, you know, yeah. I was actually doing a great job. So
yeah, no, that brings up really good points. So I'm glad you brought that up. Well, if the listeners wanted to reach you and maybe ask you questions, are you comfortable with giving them some sort of contact information, like an email address or a way that they could reach you or follow you on social media?
Yes, they can definitely email me, or I always have my phone with me. So if they want to text me, we can set up a call. Do you want me to give my number? Or
that is completely up to you, or you can have it up in the notes. I can put your email address or way to reach you through social media.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, we'll do that.
Cool. So, well, we want to thank you very much for all of your information on that. I'm sure it's going to help. I know just even the things you said resonated with me. And so there's a little bit of something for everybody in this. And I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
And that's all for this episode of Spilling the DPT. We'll look forward to spilling with y'all next time. And if you don't mind, in the meantime, drop us a rating and a comment. And we'll look forward to you tuning in next time.